When you picture an ideal educational environment, one of the hallmarks would be consistent and effective communication between teachers, students, and families. Indeed, equipping parents and caretakers with timely and useful information can be a critical determinant of academic success. But how can schools and teachers best promote such communication? That will be our topic of discussion in this episode of Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUV Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Joining me today is Russ Davis, founder of School Status, a national education technology solution promoting communication, collaboration, and training in school settings. Russ is a former chief information officer for a school system in Mississippi and has been the CEO of School Status since he founded it about 12 years ago. Also with us is Dr. Kara Stern, who is the Director of Education and Engagement at School Status. Kara has worked as a school administrator, executive director of Math for America, and has been in her current role with School Status for nearly 2 years. Russ and Kara, thank you for being on Teaching Matters. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Scott, really appreciate being here. Thanks.
Absolutely. I think if you've done any research on me, you know that my belief in communication is paramount. And so I really am excited to talk with you all about your perceptions of teacher-student communication and how you try to provide a solution for that. Russ, I'd like to start with you. You came from a family of educators, as it says on your bio, and at a ripe old age of 19 became a chief information officer for a school district, I assume that's what it was. What in your background led you from sort of the path you were on to making the decision to go into educational technology and, you know, working in that sector?
Yes, Scott, I think it's a good question. And so for me, that journey, obviously everyone in my family, as you mentioned, was a teacher at some point. Both of my sisters still teach, and they're users of our product. So I hear about that at Thanksgiving occasionally, but for me that journey was really about, I'd worked through my stint as a public servant. I eventually came to work for my Department of Education in my home state of Mississippi, and it was very apparent from talking to school districts that they wanted us to do a lot of the data work for them every day. And it was kind of puzzling to me because schools actually they're very rich with data. And so it was interesting that they would want the state, who has a small subset of that data, to do that data analytics work for them. And in the end, whenever I left state service, I was looking for, you know, something that would really impact schools. And that's how we landed on data. It was like, hey, there's obviously a gap here that if schools are asking for, you know, third parties to help them analyze their data, then there's a reason that they're not doing it themselves. And so that's really, I have a very entrepreneurial spirit and always have. I was always the, you know, I kid with the lemonade stand, that sort of thing. And so it just, you know, it just seemed to make sense for me at that time.
Was there a particular reason that you made the decision when you went into forming your company, you had to make a decision about what type of company you wanted to have and sort of what problem you wanted to focus on to provide a solution for. Was there a reason that you sort of zeroed in on this element of communication?
Yeah, it personally affected me as a big part of it. My mom was the first one in her family to graduate from high school. And I grew up in a very small town. And so there's a story, and you could watch a video about it online. But effectively, because my mom happened to bump into a teacher at one of the two grocery stores in kind of my one worst town, that I grew up in, that interaction, my mom figured out that I wasn't doing very well, and that interaction changed my life forever. It's the reason I'm sitting here before you today, that it's very unlikely that I would have graduated high school without my mom directly intervening, and the only reason she did that is because she happened to communicate that day with the teacher. And so, you know, kind of the thesis there is that shouldn't be left to chance. Most people don't have those interactions. Most people don't grow up in a town of 2,000 people. And so schools really do have to over-communicate and talk about things that actually matter for kids. Schools are doing a great job of communicating information out, but we find often those conversations are lacking in the nature of the communication, which is, you know, parents tend to zero in whenever it's a conversation about a student, right? Not just about, you know, PTA meetings and, you know, kind of PR events. Those are great and those are important. But really, that's where the rubber meets the road. What changed my life and what changes the lives of kids is when parents and teachers talk about a specific student.
Yeah, that's a great story. Even in my town of Athens, Ohio, I make the joke that a lot of business gets done over the oranges at Kroger. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Yep.
Carrie, you also made a switch. You worked as an administrator in K-12 schools, and then now you're obviously you achieved your PhD, and you're in the technology sector. What led you to make that pivot in your career?
So good question. I got my PhD a long time ago. That's not a new thing. But I was a school-based practitioner for a very long time. I was a teacher and a principal. And then I decided I wanted to sort of get outside of being inside of a school and work with teachers in a different way. And that was how I ended up at Map for America. And then I missed being in a school. So I went back and I became a head of school at a small rural school where exactly I would go to the grocery store on Sunday morning and get involved in a long conversation with every parent that I ran into about bullying or homework or whatever it was. My partner is a higher education academic, and so I had to make a move, and I now live in a place where it's really difficult for me to work in a school because of language issues, and so I made the jump to EdTech. And EdTech mm-hmm. has been a really interesting, different viewpoint on K-12 education. I've really had a good time.
Your, as I surmise, your portfolio with school status is relatively broad. You're working on topics ranging from teacher-student, teacher-parent communication. Also, it looks like you do some work related to what I would call the hard skills of communication that surrounds the family, the student. Why do you think that these communication skills are so important for a student's academic success?
Well, I think that the idea of school-to-home communication is really fundamental to students' ability to be successful at school. And I've really come to believe that communicating home is as essential to a student's success as good instruction, as good pedagogy, as a great teacher in the classroom. I actually just shared with colleagues a report out of the Hechinger, the Hechinger publication that was sharing a report from TNTP showing that one of the qualities of the schools that are having the most student gains right now are schools that are creating a culture of belonging. And that culture is really only created when there is very robust, consistent, thoughtful, caring, positive communication going on in school and between school and home.
Russ, School Status recently released a research report. And in that report, about 88% of respondents cited attendance as an important or critical reason for academic success, sort of hearkening back to the story that you told in some ways. That same survey showed that approximately 55% of the respondents received no communication about their child's attendance or only received it after there was a problem. This issue of attendance has been often referred to, especially post-pandemic, as a nationwide crisis. Given your background and what you're trying to do with your company, what are the reasons that you cite for attendance being so critical and why it still remains a crisis today for many schools? Oh, I think you're muted.
Sorry about that, guys. No, I appreciate that. I think the number one reason is that students who don't show up can't learn. And I know that sounds pretty rudimentary, but it is a persistent issue. During the pandemic, we, told parents, keep your kids at home if they have the sniffles or whatever the case may be. And it de-emphasized attendance over time. And now kind of that genie is out of the bottle. And school districts have to find a balance between, obviously you don't want kids coming to school who are sick, But folks realized, you know, or folks came to the conclusion, which is false, that my, you know, maybe my child doesn't need to be there as much as schools have typically said. And there are a number of issues. You know, some of it is around, you know, transportation issues. You know, the economy has fundamentally changed after COVID. Some of it is around, you know, like I said, the perceptions of attendance and how important it is in a school district. And, you know, again, that's why, you know, the work that communications is an academic intervention and should be treated as such. And so to have that disparity where folks know that communication about attendance is important, but, you know, 55% of folks aren't really receiving any communication about that, that's a huge issue. That's a gap that has to be filled. And school districts have to be deliberate about that. Everything in education, nothing changes unless somebody decides to attack that issue and have an intervention towards that. And so schools have to have not just this punitive process by which, hey, we've got to get kids back in seats or we're going to take you to court. We have to fundamentally shift the conversation about why is that important? How does it impact my child? And create a culture of showing up every day.
As I think about, you know, what you just said, of course, the implication would be that schools, as you said, needs to be more deliberate. I want to talk about, you know, school status as solution in just a little bit, but sure. as a preview to that, of course, teachers have the ability to send emails. They have the ability to make a phone call. There are parent-teacher conferences. In your opinion, have those modes of communication kept pace with sort of where the culture's at right now in terms of making that a functional and user-friendly method of communicating, the more ad hoc methods like that?
Yeah, I think that one-to-one communication is the most effective communication. So anytime somebody reaches out and says, hey, I'd like to talk about Russ, right, just like my mom and that teacher did, those are the conversations that are most impactful. But the majority of our communications coming from schools really focuses on mass communication, PR activities, public perception, letting folks know about, you know, it's senior night, which again is very important. But is not ultimately going to move the academic needle for a student very much. I mean, it's again, in mass, it's important for the culture of a school, but it's not going to tell a parent, can your child read on grade level? If not, here are the things that are important for doing so. Your child is not coming to school regularly, and if they miss more than 5 days, for instance, then they're twice as likely to repeat the grade, depending on, you know, what that statistic is. Like those, that information is not often getting to parents, and so they often don't understand the impact. And the reason it's not getting to parents is because of time. Schools, every teacher in the country, their day is scheduled from the moment they get to school to the moment they leave school. And that's why you have to have solutions that help track and make a deliberate effort towards getting those interventions, which we know work, by the way. We've been doing it for 20 years. There's tons of research about this. Whenever parents and teachers connect with one another, students do better, and it works for, you know, kids of color, white kids, kids of poverty, high need. It works for non-native English speakers. It works for everyone. And so parents and teachers, whenever they communicate, students do better from every background and every ilk.
Kara, turning to you in that same survey, and by the way, I will attempt to provide a link to the survey so that listeners or viewers of the podcast can download it. My recollection, and Russ or Kara, correct me if I'm wrong, you have to maybe fill out your name to be able to get the survey to download, but as I remember, it's easily accessible. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. We're not going to send you, you know, 500 emails or anything like that. It's just to track how many people are downloading it for the most part.
I can attest that I've received no spam from you as a result of downloading it. But Kara, I want to turn to you. In that same survey, 71% of the respondents indicated a desire for more communication. It's very much what, you know, Russ just said, that more communication is better. But, you know, in my field of communication, we often say that simple equation of more is not always better. You know, it also has to be deliberate and thoughtful. From your background and the work that you're doing, what do you think the hallmarks of an effective communication strategy, either at the school, the district, or even the classroom level, what should that look like in order for it to maximize benefits for students?
Well, that's a big question. I'll try not to speak for too long. First of all, I think I want to just focus my response on the idea of attendance. and that if kids aren't coming to school, just like Russ said, they can't learn. And so the number one thing that we need to do is to get everybody back in their seats. So I would say, first of all, at the district level, there's a really important job of educating families about why attendance is important, what the benefits are of coming to school every day. It's really important that every family receives that information in their home language so that they are really able to support what their child needs and to say, like, no, you know what, you're going to school today. That's just the deal. You have vacation in a few weeks. Today, you're going to school. You need to go to school because that is the way you have a better life. So taking a really positive approach to educating parents. I talked a little bit recently in something I wrote about even thinking about attendance as curriculum. And this is something that we want to really teach families about because they don't know. So that, I would say, is one big piece of an important communication plan at the district level. And that's something that is not a one-off, but, you know, every month, every quarter, something that goes home before high absenteeism periods, like before a vacation. At the district level, you really want to positively hammer home why you want your kids in school every day. Now, at the building level, I think it's important for the principal to be communicating with families on a regular basis, whether that's through a newsletter that shares all the exciting things that are happening at school, that highlights attendance statistics that are going on in the building, that celebrates students, celebrates faculty members. That is a way of helping everyone feel connected. And then at the classroom level, that's where there needs to also be one-to-one outreach. And again, you know, it has to be language accessible. We have a lot of newcomer families in our schools, and if we're not able to successfully communicate with our newcomer parents, then their children don't have as much opportunity to succeed as everyone else. So sharing what's going on in the classroom, sending home, ask your child about questions, but also following up, sending a quick text. Hey, Russ did great today in our, you know, presentations. I was so proud of him. Or, hey, I saw that Scott hasn't been at school twice this week. Let's try to talk about this because we don't want him to feel like he is having trouble catching up and keeping up. Let's see what we can do. So I guess that would be the tiers that I would go through.
Yeah, that's a very comprehensive answer. Russ, given, you know, the answer that she just outlined, what do you perceive as being the primary barriers for that would be preventing this from happening?
As I mentioned, time is a huge one. And then having a comprehensive way to track this and make sure that it's happening. Schools, make sure it's happening in mass. Schools know that they should be doing these things. It's not, you know, everyone says it's, you know, I should be sending more communication, right? But at the end of the day, you know, there people also say the same thing about diet and exercise. I know I should be doing it, but unless I have a comprehensive plan to address it, I'm unlikely to lose weight. And so you can tell what matters most to schools by where they spend their time. And so you have to be very deliberate about it. And there has to be a comprehensive way that enables administrators and teachers to see the problem holistically. And again, you have to have a tiered system. If you try to communicate in the exact same way to everyone, regardless of where they start from, where their absenteeism is trending, et cetera, then you're going to overwhelm people with communication, and you're not going to be able to have a lot of those one-on-one conversations that Kara mentioned that has a big impact. So it has to be a tiered system, just like we do in everything else in education. We give mass education, and then we drill down into students that need more intervention based upon their skills. It's the same thing for attendance. We have to have mass communication about the importance of attendance. We have to find students before they that are trending towards truancy and intervene to get them back in school before they are kind of that top tier, which is like, hey, students that are truly truant, how do we bring them back? Those are the ones that we're going to be doing a ton of one-on-one communication with. Those are the ones that we're going to be scheduling conferences with at our school. We're going to be doing home visits to show up at their house and see what's going on. But you obviously can't scale that for every student in the school. And so the more work you do that at the tiers in order to prevent that from happening, again, prevention is worth a pound of, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It's the same thing here. And so you have to have a comprehensive plan to deal with it. You have to have a comprehensive system to manage it. And then you have to tier it out so that it makes a, makes a difference. And, you know, look, that's not easy. That's not intuitive, but there's a lot of research about this topic. And again, that's where, you know, providers like School Status and other folks in the industry can help out there by providing, you know, tools to help manage that process and make it easier and let folks know, you know, this is what you should be doing and when.
So both of you have, you know, talked in great detail about the importance of this tiered system. Ultimately, the messages also matter, and you've talked about attendance as being one of those messages, and the report also identifies other topic areas like behavior in the classroom, general academic achievement, and those sorts of things. When I was prepping for this podcast, I ran across a 2023 research article by an organization called Talking Points, and they used AI to look at some of the substantive messages that parents received on their platforms. And one of the interesting things that jumped out to me was that about 44% of the messages they analyzed were, when they were about behavior and participation, they were negative in tone. It led me to question, if we were working with teachers and they had a multi-tiered platform like what you all are providing, I assume that there should be some level of training with teachers to help them understand sort of the balance of the positive reinforcement, or, you know, what Jerry Brophy would say would be the praise towards the student that is specific and targeted, alongside, you know, what would maybe have to be behavior correction messages. Is this something that School Status gets into, or just from your own professional backgrounds, how would you mentor, especially, you know, young teachers, or really any teachers for that matter, about how to think about the tonality of the messages?
Yes, Scott, I'll take the first little bit of it, and then Kara's the one that has the pedagogical experience. But I would say that there is a negative correlation. If you look at most schools, there is a negative correlation with parent communication and student achievement. And the reason that there is because we typically only reach out whenever there's a problem, right? We're not doing that tier one intervention or that tier two intervention before there is a big issue. So I think that's number one, is identifying students earlier. Number two is that you have to have somewhat of a prescriptive component. If you just start from getting past page one of writing a manuscript is probably like sitting down and doing it the first time is probably the hardest thing. And so it's the same thing here. But if you start with the blinking cursor on the top left corner of the screen and go, okay, well, maybe this will work or maybe that will work, you're going to go through a lot of trial and error before you determine what's most successful. And so that's where having, you know, a partner that has 20 years of research into the messages that matter to, so you say the right thing to the right person at the right time, as part of a prescriptive component as well. And so, you know, when folks are shopping for systems, whether it be School Status or some other system, I think having messages that are tried and true and are proven, that are translated, that have the right tone, that have the right mix of upbeat versus, you know, letting folks know that there is accountability, I think that that's really important. Kara, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I would just add, because Scott mentioned mentoring new teachers, I read a really interesting study recently that just, it came out like in June, that talked about how teachers of students who are chronically absent have not only worse relationships with those students, but think less of their abilities, have lower expectations of them. And I believe that that really gets communicated to students. And, you know, one of the key things about coming to school is that kids come to school when they think there's an adult there who cares that they are there. So if their teachers are communicating distance, it's only going to push them to stay home. So I would say that it is really important for the building leadership and the instructional leadership to help teachers understand that the way to achieve success with their students is to build relationships with them and with their family that are positive and supportive.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I totally agree with that. Given my background, the idea of having messages that are immediate in nature and establishes relationships with the students and then the broader family is continually shown to be something that draws students into an education environment. My research brain tells me that. My daughter's a middle school teacher and will tell me that every day after she comes home from school. You know, it's all about the relationships you have with the students that really allows them to feel like they belong in an educational environment, especially in a rural area. Rush, you can probably relate to this well, in a rural area where they have options to just not go to school and work, you know, with their family and things like that. I think it's so important to draw them in. Russ, let's switch gears and talk a little bit more in detail about the solution that School Status offers. We talked about barriers, and you mentioned time as being one of those that are significant, and I'm sure there are others. What are the things that you all try to do with your platform to reduce the effect of those barriers and then, on the flip side, increase the quality of communication that is getting to families?
I appreciate that. So you did mention, I've mentioned, and then of course it's no secret that teachers are burdened for time, right? That's probably the number one issue. And so a lot of this has to happen without folks doing something about it. So you have to have some degree of automation. And that's where having like a service provider like School Status can help out. And so we're the nation's largest and oldest provider of attendance communication. And so we literally send out millions and millions and millions of letters, for instance, postcards that are positive. It's not just a digital component that folks kind of get into. And that a big reason for that is that the number one way to get something read is to send a letter to someone's home that says to the parents of, without fail, nearly a 100% read rate. Email, not as much. Text messages have a read rate in the high 90s, but I'm starting to get lots of spam, especially during the election season. So if I get a message from an unknown number, I am just as inclined to click stop and like stop the madness from coming in my coming in the messages app on my phone. And so there has to be an automatic component of that. And that's really what having a system does. It's not, you're not going to click a button and improve achievement. So there are a lot of systems out there that say, oh yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to send these messages. It's going to be great. You know, we're going to have some AI bot that's going to write a ton of content for you, and it's going to be amazing. I think the second that parents feel like they're communicating with a bot, the jig is up, right? Like something like that's not a good place to be. It's not a good look. And it's the same reason that whenever, you know, you're chatting with a bot online and you figure it out, you just kind of spam agent or zero until you, you know, speak to the Delta rep or whoever you're trying to reach. And so there has to be a human component. What Kara hit on is so important. Students have to feel like there's someone at school that really cares that they're there. And whenever they do feel that, students come back. And whenever parents know that they're, that that is the same thing, that there's somebody there that cares about my child and wants him to succeed, and here's why, students do better. And there's also accountability. Someone's watching. Whenever school districts don't communicate at all until you have like that eighth absence, and all of a sudden you start getting all this, you know, super communication, and somebody's knocking on your door, and they're threatening to take you to court and everything else because you took an extra week at Disney World, or, you know, your mom was sick and you couldn't bring your child to school that week, or whatever the case is, then that can be pretty scary, and that can have a negative a correlation. And so, you know, that's a big component of addressing it. It's also the messaging has to be just right, just so. And that's where a lot of schools just get it wrong, is that they are addressing chronic absenteeism the same way that they've been addressing chronic absenteeism for the last 10 years. And the data has changed. The science has changed somewhat. The reason why people aren't coming to school have changed, and they still expect those methodologies to have an effect. And that's why, you know, whenever districts, according to our study, whenever districts implemented a data-driven proactive attendance intervention, they saw a 22% reduction in chronic absenteeism rate from 21 to 22 to 23, from 22 to 23 versus 7% for the folks who are just doing that. So in effect size, that's 3x of what they would typically see. So yeah, the numbers, and there's also a component where folks feel like, oh yeah, this thing came and then it's going to go away just like anything else. And that may be true, but only at a 7% reduction, doing the same old things that they've been doing before, which isn't fast enough. Every day that a child is not at school, how many students are in that delta, right, of that 15% delta. How many students is that in a district, and what are the outcomes for those students? If they're not coming to school, they're not reading on grade level. If they're not reading on grade level in grades 3 and 8, then the chances are they're not going to graduate. They're going to have a much different quality of life than other folks. And students that graduate, it's not just a matter of them having a better outcome from a financial perspective. They actually live longer when they graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. They get to spend more time with their grandkids in those later years. It's super important. So we have to be have to have a lot of intent in what we do every day. And we have to start every day doing something. And the number one thing that we sell against as a company is doing nothing, which is crazy. And so I would just invite for the folks that are in schools that are doing the work every day, I appreciate the burden that you're under, but is today the day that you're going to tackle chronic absenteeism in a way? And by the way, you don't have to buy anything to do that. There's tons of research online. It's not going to be as effective, but there are a number of strategies that you can implement that's a ground game that if you're trying to get through this budget year and the next budget year so you can actually, you know, devote money towards it, that's fine. But there are a number of strategies. It's a question of what your school is going to do today to combat this. Are you going to do the same thing you've been doing for the past 10 years, or are you going to do something different today? And I think that's the thing I would lead folks with and challenge them, is that you have to do something, and there's a ton of research out there that states, you know, the things that are very effective. Joyce Epstein has been doing research into this topic for over 20 years. And so there's tons of it out there. We know what works. It's just a matter of implementing that with fidelity. Mm-hmm.
Kara, anything you want to add to that?
I would add to, Russ gave a great list of all the things that have changed in the past 10 years. And so to use the same approaches to combating chronic absenteeism as 10 years ago, I would just add to that list that student well-being is very different than it was 10 years ago. Kids are in a really different place with themselves, with each other, and with school.
Such an important point. And I will tell you, given, you know, where I'm at in higher education, we see, you know, people in K-12 see it flowing through the K-12 system. We see it when they get to college. Well-being is, I think, you know, you would argue that absenteeism is a critical thing that has to be addressed. They have to be in school to learn. That makes sense. When they're in school, I think well-being becomes that predominant thing. How do they feel connected? How do they feel a sense of belonging, purpose? All of those things are critically important. And my experience with the higher education students, but I'm guessing that this would resonate with K-12 teachers as well, is the biggest thing that will cause a student to not feel a perception of belonging and well-being in a setting like that is if they feel invisible. And I think that's, you know, I always tell the teachers that come into the college, whether they're teaching assistants or new faculty members, if a student knows that you know who they are and that you have a vested interest in their success, that will be the biggest determinant of them, you know, working as hard as they can for you. I want to bring back one topic because I think that one of the two of you brought this up. But of course, in all of our schools, and more so going forward, we're going to be dealing with more bilingual families, families that speak English as a second language, have cultural differences. How is it that the communication, whether it's on your platform or using a more self-made approach, how do you adapt the communication to take account for the fact that you have families that may have very limited understanding of the language that you're trying to communicate with them in?
Well, you have to reach, sorry, Kara, I didn't know if you wanted to take this one, but
no,
I'll run with it if you don't. So you have to reach folks where they are. And so that's why the content of the messages, what works for a non-native English speaker who's working at a poultry plant in rural Mississippi versus what works for a student in, you know, a nice neighborhood in Virginia, they probably have two different chronic absenteeism problems, even though those students may have the same rate. Right. Mm-hmm. So being able to communicate them in their native language using real translation, I think that's really important. For digital communication, obviously, there's like Google Translate and things like that. Whenever you send a letter home that's typed, it needs to be grammatically correct. It needs to be in the proper language. It needs to have the right tone, the right tenor, and it has to, you know, reach that person at the right time. Effectively, you have to use data to find, you know, and address every student by name and by need. And I think that's what you were getting to when you made the point earlier, which is like students have to feel like they're important. Parents have to feel like they're engaged. That I know about your student, I care about your student, and there's nothing more powerful than when a teacher and an administrator and a parent all get on what I call the same side of the table. Instead of sitting across the table from each other, they sit on the same side of the table and they you know, plan for that student and they say, look, I want Russ to succeed. Here are the barriers for that. Here's what you can do at home. Mm-hmm. And that's where the rubber meets the road with this. It's not just, hey, there's a problem. Right. It's let's get to the root cause of that problem and address it. If it's a transportation issue, if it's a clothing issue, which happens a lot. You know, again, folks have recovered from the pandemic in different ways. And then demographically, we have as a country, you know, if you look at, you know, folks that are participating in the stock market have done incredibly well, but not everybody can do that. So like the ways in which we have recovered from the pandemic, which is kind of the catalyst for this discussion because of chronic absenteeism, is different as well. And so you have to be able to address those needs and you have to be able to reach people where they are. And that means not just like the same modalities. Like I have the latest iPhone, right? Just came out, immediately got it because I'm that guy every year. Not everyone is like that. And so you have to know that a lot of your parents are carrying around candy bar phones. And so whenever you say, download our app to get engaged, that's not very effective because they don't have an app, a place where they can download that app. Sometimes they're you know, using that same Nokia phone that you can buy at the 7-Eleven. And so schools have to be aware of that. They have to understand that not everybody thinks like I do. Not everybody comes from the same background. Not everybody has the same needs. And not everybody prefers to be communicated in the same way. And sometimes that's cultural. And sometimes that's, you know, demographic. Sometimes that's social. But schools have to have a comprehensive plan for addressing all those needs or those students are going to fall through the cracks.
Kira, anything to add to that?
Just, I think that this is also a part of the discussion of teacher professional learning and the idea that a lot of teachers, and I count myself when I say this, a lot of people go into teaching and they think of their students as who they were as a student, and they're teaching to the student that they were. And that's not really the reality in most schools. There's a much wider variety of students that those teachers might be teaching, and having some real good training in culturally responsive teaching is essential. It's essential to that piece of belonging.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got one last question that is more of a broad, you know, big thinking question that I like to ask people like the two of you that have a background in both education and technology. I think there's no question that data science and artificial intelligence and the convergence of those two technologies are going to increasingly, you know, define strategies used by schools. It's going to be uneven in terms of its adoption. It's going to be uneven in terms of schools being able to afford it. But we see that coming, and it's already taking place. I think it's also fair to say that there's no one AI tool that's the magic wand, right? But just from your perspectives of people that work in the education technology sector, how do you sort of see this convergence of data science and artificial intelligence shaping education going into, you know, the next 10, 15 years? What do you think is going to be most important for both at school district levels, but also individual classroom teachers for them to be aware of so that they can be a part of that curve and use it effectively? Russ, Kira, let's start with you.
Sure.
And then Russ will end up with you.
First of all, I would say that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about data-driven instruction over the past bunch of years, and people are really just coming to understand what that means, that you can look at all of these different data points about students, and that will help you understand how to be a more effective teacher for each and every student. So I think that, you know, one of the trends, and I think school status is really kind of at the cutting edge of this, is thinking about how to take all of that data and make it really digestible for teachers so that when you are looking at a picture of a student, you see a holistic picture with lots of essential data and it's all in one place and you don't have to go searching all over the place to figure out what you need to figure out about that student and what they need. In terms of like the trends for artificial intelligence, I don't know if I'm a techie enough person to answer that. I do know that it's, I think for educators, it's a time saver, but B, a way to think through your populations in your school in a way that you haven't before. So I could see if I were still in a school building saying, you know, ChatGPT, I would like to see what a schedule would look like that would be perfect from the perspective of a 16-year-old. Because our high schoolers aren't coming to school, and maybe part of that has to do with how we've structured their day. So can you think like a 16-year-old and help me construct a schedule?
And Russ?
Yeah, so I am, I've been in education for a long time. It's where I've spent all of my adult life effectively, is working either as a public servant or selling things to people in education. And about 2 years ago, I go to a conference called ASU GSV. And about 2 years ago, everybody was talking about blockchain and how blockchain was just going to change education forever. And it's going to be this big thing. And then last year, nobody's talking about blockchain. Everybody's talking about AI. And let me be very clear. I think that AI and blockchain are two different things. And I think the applicability of AI is going to radically change the way we educate kids. But I don't think it's going to be in the way that some people hope, which is like, oh, we're going to be able to offer this AI tutor that's going to make students better no matter what. It's not going to replace teachers in the classroom, period. Just like, you know, everyone predicted like this year that, you know, so many trucks, over-the-road trucking would be a thing that would be failing, because I read a New York Times article talking about this several years ago. Like, just in a few years, we're going to have this AI is going to be driving all these trucks. It's going to put all these people out of business. Guess what? It's not really happening. Mm-hmm. And so it's harder and it's slower than expected to replace humans. And so the way I look at AI in education is that it's only going to be successful, and meaning that school districts are going to adopt it and stay put as a customer, is that that AI will save people time. The number one complaint of teachers is that they don't have enough time in their day. And so tools that give teachers back time in the classroom so that they can actually make the instructional difference, as opposed to doing a lot of minutia and work that is important, but is relatively low value when it comes to educating kids. And the teachers that are out there listening to this podcast can name exactly what those activities are, by the way. And principals, you should listen to that and try to get rid of those as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But right now, a lot of solutions in AI are novelties. They don't really save people time in the classroom. And so folks are using them in brief spurts. But it's easy to sell something to someone in education. It's actually not easy, it's not trivial, but it's easier to sell somebody something for 1 year. The key in education technology as an ed tech company is getting people to renew year over year. And you have to continually provide value to them. And that those value props are changing every year. And so AI for AI's sake, you know, it's going to be like, you know, now with more fiber, or now with, you know, it's like you see the cereal boxes, right? 4 to 5. Yeah. What the hell does that mean? And so that's kind of what AI is now for education. But the people that are going to be successful are the ones that are going to be, hey, this is going to add 22% more time back to your teaching day. Wow, that's something I definitely want to hear about, and that's something I want to buy. And then there's two types of AI. People tend to get, like, I'm amazed by like ChatGPT and Claude, you know, by Anthropic, all these engines that are out there. I think they're great. A lot of people are getting wrapped around the Gen AI, which is kind of, you know, the what to say, how to say it, that sort of thing. Predictive AI, I think, is going to make the biggest impact. And I think that's what you were alluding to, Scott. It's like taking the data and telling people, you know, like Gen AI would be telling people what to say. Predictive AI is telling people when to say it and to whom and at what cadence. I think that's going to be the nut that whenever it's cracked, and there are a lot of folks working on it, including us, I think it's going to be transformative for education. And so for right now, I think, you know, AI's been around for a while. GPT really hit the scene, you know, over a year ago. And folks are using it in some spaces, but districts also want guardrails around that AI to know where that data is going. And what folks need to know is that whenever you just go on to, you know, OpenAI and use the free version of ChatGPT, all that content is getting added to that model, and it's constantly learning, which makes those models more powerful. But there's a question about student data and who owns that data. And then once it goes into that model, it's never coming out. And so districts that are smarter getting ahead of this, they're not telling people you can't use this technology. They're saying here's a safe way to use this technology in a way that doesn't compromise our core tenets of security and student safety. And those are the districts that are going to be thought leaders and are going to be, you know, that are going to see, you know, that their efforts really take off, as opposed to districts that are more super conservative and saying, hey, we shouldn't do this. And they're going to be adopting AI in 3 years when everyone else has already figured it out. And so you just got to strike that balance. I think you got to have a framework around it and you got to pick the right application for the right use case in your district.
Absolutely. A great answer. I find that a lot of the AI tools that I could be using are not necessarily changing my time allocation and workflow. They are novelties, as you said, and sometimes they provide creative solutions. Though I've still yet to find one that is something that I religiously go to every single day of my work. Of my workflow, it just doesn't work that way. Russ and Kara, I want to thank both of you for being on. Russ, you mentioned something earlier talking about the effect sizes of how communication can change the game for students, and that's true. And of course, I believe that. I also believe in the power of saving one individual. And I think at the end of the day, what you all are doing is trying to provide great tools to try to help teachers make a difference in individual students' lives. And I appreciate you doing that. And I appreciate the fact that you gave us time today to talk about issues related to communication with teachers and families, and also the product that you have.
Thanks, Scott. We really appreciate you having us on, and thanks so much, and look forward to connecting in the future.
Absolutely. Kara, it's great to meet you.
And you as well, and thank you for just facilitating this conversation.
Absolutely, it was my pleasure. My guest today was Russ Davis, CEO and founder of School Status. Along with him was Dr. Kara Stern. She's the Director of Education and Engagement at School Status. Remember that in the text accompanying the podcast, we'll provide a link to the report that we talked about at various points during this discussion. Thank you for listening to Teaching Matters. If you're listening to us on any of the traditional podcasting platforms like NPR, Spotify, or Apple, remember that we also are using a YouTube option this year. So you can join us on YouTube simply by searching for Teaching Matters Podcast and be able to listen to us in the background, but also be able to see us talking to each other, which is a new way to have fun with consuming the great discussions that we have. Many thanks to our staff, assistant producers April Koska and Trinity Sweet to help pull all of this together. And we are appreciative of all of you listening or watching the podcast, and we hope you have a great day.